This is Philip Bracey for the Youngstown State University's oral history program concerning the shutdown of Youngstown Sheet and Tube and the various perspectives therein. Today I'm interviewing Dr. Koss from the Economic Department. And first of all, Dr. Koss, Mr. Koss, would you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I took my work at Pitt. I started out in business administration, later got an MA in accounting, and did work in economics at Ohio State, but didn't get my PhD. I then later took here at Youngstown State an MA in counseling, and I've been taking courses in the university in areas of my interest. I've been on the faculty here in economics since we became a state university in 67, and I'm now interested in the development of a program that is pending and should be, I hope, approved by the Ohio Board of Regents any day now, and that is the program on labor relations, which is broader than economics. It's a broadly multidisciplinary program.
You also worked in the steel industry.
Yeah. Before I went into, after I graduated from Pitt, I was hired as a management candidate with U.S. Steel. And for 2 years, they sent me through a training program, various plants across the country and in the general office. I did some work. I'd worked before that while I was a student in the open hearth at Homestead Steel. And then I was assigned to Homestead Steel for a number of years doing cost analyst. Later, I went into a staff position at U.S. Steel in Central Operations, called Central Operations then, which was a management corporation of U.S. Steel with headquarters in Pittsburgh. We did staff studies on new facilities, sales analysis, special cost studies, standard cost, defenses against litigation, that kind of thing.
Do you remember, you know, where you were and what was going on at the time of the announced shutdown of the Youngstown Sheet and Tube?
Yes, I remember the time that the shutdown of Youngstown Sheet and Tube was announced. I don't remember specifically where I was and when I first heard it. I had been anticipating something like that for years, but the plant continued to seem to operate. It was apparently a shot out of the blue to many people here. They were surprised at that kind of action on the part of the management of Sheet Two, but I didn't see it that way because I had some knowledge of the steel industry, and I could see that the facilities were not being upgraded. They were not reinvesting here. Generally, they were not reinvesting. Mostly, they were making expenditures for plant and equipment repair and some change, but not very much. I have since found that most of their investment was put in at Indiana Harbor, a new plant in the Midwest. But it didn't surprise me. I expected it before it came.
There was much discussion over whether the Mahoney Valley should continue with steel operation or whether, you know, the economic advantage had moved someplace else, and they should go into diversification. How did you feel, you know, what was your reaction to that? Did you support those who said, diversification because of the present state of the Mahoning Valley should be moved out, or did you support those who were more in line with the economic
development? Well, when this occurred, the media from downtown came up to the university. They must have thought, well, we have an economics department, we ought to interview the professors on the staff there, see what they think of this. And my response was, at that time, and it wasn't a very popular response, it wasn't something that they or the steelworkers in the valley were very anxious to hear. My response was that I thought that this valley had lost basic steel just as surely as New England had lost the textile industry, because of the fact that the economic advantages for basic steel had left the valley from what had been when the industry was placed here. And in fact, when I was back at U.S. Steel in the cost and statistics division doing these staff long-range studies. At that time, the McDonald Works and the Ohio Works here in this valley, both owned by U.S. Steel and other company other than Sheet and Tube, those facilities were almost marginal then. And we then called it the Ohio Works. No, we called it the Youngstown District Works at that time. And I expected them to be shut down, too, and of course, subsequently, they were. Since we're speaking now, this is November of 81, and they were subsequently shut down, which didn't surprise me.
From your experience in the steel industry, usually in every industry, there's signs that something like that is going to transpire, either transfer personnel or some kind of other inside stuff that you could look at and say, okay, something must be going on because of what's been going on in that particular area. Were there any, you mentioned that there were indications that prior to the shutdown that perhaps that was going on. What signs did you see that kind of led you to the idea that was inevitable?
Well, now, my experience in the steel industry was all with United States Steel Corporation. It was not related to Sheet and Tube, except as they were a part of the industry. But I could see just crossing over that, what is it, the Center Avenue Bridge or whatever it is. I could see from the looks of the facilities that they weren't being updated and upgraded. And if they weren't marginal, they were approaching marginality. And I was familiar enough with the steel industry. I had visited a lot of plants. I knew something about the steel industry, and I knew enough, even though I'd been away from it for some time, to know that those facilities were approaching obsolescence. Now, one of the things the Cost and Statistics Division did at U.S. Steel, the division I worked in, after I was called to the city office from Homestead District Works, was to make these long-range studies. Now, I got there after they made most of the work in deciding to put a new steel plant in at Fairless. That was put in about 51 or 2. It went into operation. On that study, there were 14 locations where that plant could have been put, and most of the additional facilities are in the steel industry have been what they call add-on capacity. You have an existing plant and you add facilities to increase capacity. In that case, they looked at those 14 other possible locations where they had other facilities, and they decided not to add on, but to build a new plant from the ground up. So I had that kind of knowledge of the steel industry, having worked in it and having, you know, been in a staff position and having had access to a lot of confidential cost data. We had costs on making steels of all grades that these various plants could make from all our locations. We compared those costs. So we had the economic basis to determine whether or not a plant was marginal or at least whether or not it was marginal on certain products. Sometimes, Edgar Thompson, I'm thinking of that, works now in Pittsburgh in North Braddock. About that time, about 1957 or 8, that plant was just about completely shut down. Well, it was shut down, except they had put in a new foundry. Now, the foundry was modern, and they had put in, and I never could understand why, they'd put in a new rail mill, too, at that time, at a time when there was no market for rails. But I still don't know why they did that. But on some kind of product, like stuff coming out of that foundry, which is a modern foundry, it was highly competitive. But the rest of the facilities was obsolete. It was shut down. And that was the kind of what happened in North Braddock I could see happening in Youngstown with regard to the fact that a lot of the young people moved away from that area. Old people remained. And they had one case that I remember of a police officer in North Braddock back about that time was supplementing his income as a police officer by directing traffic at a supermarket. And it just so happened he was injured by a car. And the question arose as to whether or not he was covered for medical back in the police, you know, his regular job as a police officer. And the community was so short of taxes, the same thing has been happening here because of the reduction of this the amount of this industrial property of tax duplicate that, you know, they had a big controversy about that in the news. And that's the very thing that's happened in Youngstown recently since these shutdowns. The first thing U.S. Steel tried to do was move out, when they shut down their works, move out the equipment, because they wanted to remove that equipment from the tax duplicate. And you remember that workers were able for a time to delay that kind of action.
So what kind of lead time would you need for a decision or a plan to say, well, we're going to phase this out of this operation within a given period of time? Do you think, in other words, it couldn't happen as rapidly as what happened in the Youngstown situation, that they announced it on Sunday and they decided to close on Monday?
No, they knew ahead of that. But if I were an executive in charge of a large company like that and I knew I had a facility that was marginal, that I was planning to shut down, unless I was forced to notify the community and the workers and the union that I was going to shut down, I don't know whether I would tell them. I don't know whether I'd tell them enough. Because what's going to happen? If I tell a plant I'm going to shut it down in 3 years, the first thing that's going to happen is my most productive workers there are going to leave that plant. They're going to get a job. They're going to try to relocate, as any reasonable person would, in order to get themselves relocated in some other company, some other plant. And that's going to give me nothing but problems, it seems to me, there. And I'm going to be, and so that might really hasten the shutdown of that plant. Then, too, economic conditions may be such that even though I have an estimated time for a shutdown, it's based upon an estimate. Conditions can change, and it might extend it 6 months or a year or two. And then if I commit myself, I may have to shut that down because of the statement I've made, even though I could otherwise possibly extend it somewhat.
I believe it was 1969 when the Youngstown Sheet and Tube, LTV?
Okay.
That became the merger. Does a merger necessarily indicate, is that a kind of a precondition for, or is that really have nothing to do with anything?
I think that a lot of people blame, we heard here that LTV came in and they milked the subsidiary dry, the way the analogy of milking cow, and they didn't reinvest back in that facility, and they milked it dry, and then when it was about ready to collapse, they shut it down. And people who made that argument argued that had it been locally run, possibly those managers who were local might have invested more if it was their sole facility. And there may be some merit to that. However, I contend that if LTV did milk that facility dry, that's exactly what an intelligent management should have done. What do you do when you have various facilities and one of them is almost marginal? You work it as long as you can, make the repair that you need to in order to keep it going. And then when, since you know you're not going to reinvest there, you're reinvesting somewhere else. And they were out at Indiana Harbor. In another plant where you had more economic advantages. And then when it's just about ready to collapse, you shut it down. So, and I don't think that was a bad decision. I think that was smart management. It's unfortunate that the people in this community had to bear the brunt of that. And then we get into the old argument as to whether or not these companies have social responsibility. And Friedman, for one, argues that they don't. And, of course, there's a lot of controversy on that. And I, on this kind of thing, I have a tendency to agree with Friedman on that. And on a lot of things, I don't agree with him on.
You mentioned earlier that the economics department was approached by, you inferred, I think, that there was some either political subdivision over. Who approached the university and the economics department?
Well, it was downtown. I've forgotten who it was. The television stations and I guess the newspaper. I don't remember exactly who it was.
Were there any political divisions like the county or the city that were?
With regard to the media that I mentioned and referred to earlier, I meant the media, the television stations and their reporters that come out and their photographers. And I think the Vindicator was out. I don't remember that the. At least they didn't interview me. I don't remember that county commissioners or anybody like that came up. They may have been interested in what our views were. And I might say, too, that most of the economists, I think almost without exception, most of the economists, at least the statements I heard them make, were pretty much consistent with my own. That is, that to have invested here in that, in basic steel, would have resulted in a misallocation of resources over a long period of time. And our views, I think, have been vindicated. Had we been wrong, and had LTV been wrong, and had U.S. Steel been wrong in shutting down these facilities, it seems to me by now, some other steel producer, having recognized that mistake, would be back in here now and would be investing in their facilities in basic steel in this location. And that, to date, hasn't occurred.
I'd like to get your reaction to three different ideas that were put forth. Initially, the Ecumenical Coalition had developed the process of community worker ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Did you agree with that kind of proposal?
Well, that was an interesting locally, we built up a tremendous head of steam over these shutdowns. And I think one of the reasons we did that, Northeast Ohio and Youngstown specifically, was one of the hardest hit with so many shutdowns all at once, and certainly in that industry. We lost three plants within a very short period of time. And we were heavily oriented toward heavy steel, basic steel. So I think it was interesting that the steel workers in this area were able to build up that kind of following, and that they did get the attention in the press, and they marched on Washington. They did get some attention. And it would have been an interesting thing to see what would have happened had the workers been able to raise the funds to operate that plant. I think they could have operated the plant, that if you mean by operation, just run the production side of it, because they'd probably been doing it for 30 years. But I don't think they would have been able to run the business, not only of just producing steel as they had in the past, but also of doing all the planning and also selling the product at a profit that was coming off those facilities. The facilities were too old and the costs were too high. It wasn't due to the workers' inefficiency. The workers you required on the line were determined by the kind of equipment you had. The equipment was old and you had needed a whole lot more people on the line than you would have with a modern facility. So I don't think they could have sold profitably that output. And of course, they had an answer for that. Let the government buy it, see. But then the other producers would say, yeah, if the government buys your stuff, then they don't buy some of the stuff that we're now selling. And you had that kind of problem.
Were you familiar with Father Hoagland's proposal?
Father Hogan, the steel priest from Fordham, I think, Jesuit, yes.
Yeah.
He had a number of proposals, one of which was one modern blast furnace, another was a possible coke facility. There is a shortage of coke. And in fact, he came out, I think, to one of the, either Mahoning Country Club or somewhere out to the north there. I went one time out toward some country club where he spoke. And he talked about the possibility of putting in one large, big, modern, low-cost blast furnace. Except he had to be concerned about the output from that blast furnace. Who would utilize it? So he asked U.S. Steel how much they would take, because the Ohio Works and McDonald at that time were still operating. U.S. Steel said none. They asked Sharon, how much would you take? Sharon said they would take a certain amount. I've forgotten what it was. It was a small percentage, maybe, I don't know what percentage it was, maybe a fifth or a fourth at most. And they asked then, of course, Youngstown Sheet and Tube was shut down already, and they asked Copperweld, I think it was, or Republic and Warren, and they have electric furnaces and they have no need for hot iron. They use scrap largely in that process. So the result was there was nobody to take the output for one modern, big, economy of scale related blast furnace. So that was, for that reason, not feasible in this area. Then he talked about a possible modern coke battery, a big coke facility, because there is a shortage of coke. And even today, I think it's Sharon that bought the old coke facilities down here in Struthers, and they're operating them because of the shortage of coke. I think probably they're getting away with not observing pollution standards because of the pressure of employment in this area. So they looked at that, and he said, well, this coke has a great shortage of that. Maybe you could set something like that up. Well, after his talk, I went and I finally was able to get to hear Father Hogan, and I asked him, well, why in the world have you put a coke oven in this area? Why would you put it in Youngstown? Why not put it on the Ohio River? I'm thinking of Clairton, which is probably the biggest coke oven facility in the world, you know, coke plant. And they use a lot of coking coal, and they transport it, of course, by barge. He said, well, that's probably where it would be. You know, he was aware of that. So, but Youngstowners wanted to hear about something for Youngstown proper. And so there's a lot of problems with that. That hasn't been implemented in this valley. But that's more feasible and more likely, more probable of a greater probability of success of that. But I'm not sure it would be in Youngstown.
The third proposal that was put forth by Mayor Richley in the Mahoning Valley Economic Development Committee, and that was for a steel research center located in the facility.
That might have some, promise, but it seems to me that if you're going to put something like that, it ought to be somewhere near where you have a lot of basic steel operations in progress. We no longer have them here. And while it might have been feasible and possible, it seems to me that facility should have been near some Fairless or Sparrows Point where they have an operation like that going on. So, of course, we were searching and for whatever we could to create some diversification in the valley, and that effort is going on. And it's good to think these things through, but I don't think that has much. I don't think, if I were in charge, if I were to make a recommendation for that kind of facility, it seems that I would not recommend that it be in the middle of the cornfields of Iowa. And while Youngstown isn't quite the same situation, I don't think it ought to be in Youngstown either. It ought to probably be near a modern steel-producing facility where you have access to those kinds of facilities, which you'll relate to with regard to this research.
Some of the research points to the fact that steel is going to need mini mills now rather than the old.
Mini mills, yes.
Do you think that, A, is correct, and B, what would be the economic justification for that?
Well, the mini mills are a different kind of operation. All they do is take the steel and they process it into a narrow product line. They are not completely integrated steel producers the way, for instance, United States Steel Corporation is. When we talk about an integrated producer, we talk about somebody who goes from the ore all the way to the customer. You know, the ore, the blood, the coke, they make coke, they dig out the limestone, they have blast furnaces, rolling mills, and they convert to anything. And then they also have warehouses and sales offices to sell internationally. A mini mill is a modern, specialized kind of facility that has a very narrow product line. And they can buy some kinds of semi-finished steel, and they can transport it almost anywhere and convert it to a specific narrow line of product very, very economically. And we have a number of those working in the facility in the country now, in these narrow areas. And they are economically feasible, they are economically efficient, and they can compete with the big companies in that narrow line.
But then would you still need your larger?
Oh, yeah, because the largest integrated producer supplies this mini mill with plates or slabs or whatever it may be, bars that they later reduce to the product line that they roll or process, however.
Okay.
So those mini mills, though, are a relatively new development in relatively recent years, but they're very narrow. They're not a completely integrated steel producer.
There was one other proposal put forward, and I'm not clear who really started the idea. But that was the idea of a community bond when a steel facility or something along that line employs large numbers of people. If they should try to withdraw, it'd be like an insurance policy. If they withdrew suddenly, like closing a facility, Youngstown Sheet and Tube, McDonald Works, or any of that, that money would be like insurance. It would be towards the community. And that's why they call it the community bond. Do you think that's a reasonable expectation given the advantages a lot of communities will get, will give to get a plant in their area?
Well, I'm not sure of all the details and what specifically has been proposed with this in this regard. But if we're, if you're saying, if the question is whether or not a community ought to basically underwrite industry in order to get industry in an area, there are some advantages for that. But there are some disadvantages, too. And one of the biggest disadvantages that economists would argue about is whether or not that will result in a misallocation of resources, which means that we would possibly have people come in and build plants in places where, absent those incentives that the community provides, those plants wouldn't place. That is, the economic advantages other than these special incentives are such that the plant wouldn't be put there. And when you once put it in, you're sunk. The way the university committee is going to be in the sunk cost situation with regard to the stadium when they put it in, and it's about nearing completion. We're not going to move that stadium the day after tomorrow. You can be sure of that. Like blast furnace, when you put in, it's going to stay there. And so we're stuck with that decision. And so that's the biggest, that is, see, if the economic advantages for a certain kind of industry exist in an area, you really don't need much in the way of an incentive to get people to locate that industry there.
The basic argument was that the company should have to put up a bond because the community usually gives incentives as far as tax breaks, is that the other thing? For some, in other words, it would be like a deterrent from just, you know, yanking out of community as rapidly as they did.
Okay, if that's another aspect of that, then it placed an additional cost on the community or on the company that would locate in that community. And as a result of that, its cost would be higher, and it might cause, because of the additional cost, a shutdown come sooner than it otherwise would come, because the cost to the company would be increased because of that. Now, because of that additional cost, they might operate a little longer, but that in itself results in a misallocation of resources. They're operating longer than they otherwise would, because otherwise they would relocate somewhere else or produce somewhere else. Now, maybe there's some way you could increase the tax on the land so that they unload and sell the land. Maybe the cost of holding vacant land is too cheap. And if that cost were increased with heavy taxes, it might be an incentive for that owner to sell it to somebody else who might, you know, develop it for the community.
But you think, by and large, what ultimately probably will result is that the company, realizing that it's now marginal anyway, will announce maybe 2 years ahead of time that, you know, they're going to close rather than staying open because they have reached their marginal point and they're going to, you know, probably start losing money for the next maybe few quarters.
I would say, and I've been involved with unions. I teach labor, collective bargaining, labor law here for years, and I have been on the management side. As a manager in this kind of industry, it seems to me I would not announce a proposed shutdown unless I had to. Now, if the union forces me to, then it forces me to make a decision, which, when that time is up, I may not want to shut down. I may be forced to because of the cost that the union levies on me with its power. But based upon economics alone, I would rather not announce and play it by ear. I know I'm not going to rebuild there. I know I'm not going to reinvest there. I've looked at that enough to know that I won't do that. I've made enough studies on that. But I don't know when I'm going to shut down vis-a-vis my costs and the various other facilities that I have making similar product and the way the market may move and the economy generally.
Is there anything I probably should have asked you related to this particular topic that I didn't ask you, or there's any statements you'd like to make that relates to what we've said that I haven't asked you directly?
Well, I can't think of anything offhand other than to say what I've been, I think, saying, if not directly in an implied way, and that is that the economic advantages for these kinds of operations in this valley have either ceased or decreased, and that's the reason that management hasn't reinvested. And to cause those managers, those executives who invest here, contrary to these views, contrary to these perceptions that they have based upon their studies, would result in a misallocation of resources and cause higher cost production in this area, which would be operate to the detriment of the entire economy and would be less efficient than they're locating elsewhere where costs would be lower.
Okay, I'd like to thank you for taking time this afternoon for the interview. And I should note that the interview started at 2:30.